Well, good day to you. It's Joel with For King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
God already knows where you are, but if you're willing to meet him where you truly are, like not where you hope to be, not where you pretend to be, if you're willing to bring your full self, all of your scars, all your hurts, all of it, if you're willing to bring yourself to him in that way, what's going to happen is there's going to be things over time that, because you don't do that once, you do it on a daily basis. There's going to be things that happen in your life, and there's going to be something that comes to the surface that has been suppressed.
Are you ready to talk to me? My name is Deborah Falada, and I'm a licensed professional counselor, national speaker, and author. Through my blog, books, and podcast, I have the privilege of helping millions of people get healthy mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and relationally. The purpose of this podcast is to have on-air, authentic, counseling-style sessions where we talk about how people are really doing and give my guests and callers an opportunity to talk to me as a licensed professional counselor. Each of these episodes is meant to show you that we are all on the journey of healing, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and relationally, together. None of us are immune to the challenges and struggles of life, but we don't have to walk this path alone. I'm so proud and honored to be having these conversations with men and women who are courageously paving the way for open and honest conversations about their personal journey of healing. So if you're ready, let's talk. Today on the podcast, we are joined by Joshua Broom. I'm so excited to have you and just to dig into your story. So for those who don't really know who you are or what you're about, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I'm an author, speaker. I operate a nonprofit called Finding Hope, and we primarily function in, we partner with organizations doing the work, whether it's restoration or rehabilitation, regarding people who are coming out of sex work, advocating for legislation, and then primarily preaching and teaching.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, so what you're known for on the internet is being a former porn star. Is that right? Okay,
that is true.
So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so from 2006 to early 2013, I was in the porn industry. I did over 1,000 movies and had a lot of success from the outside looking in. Were nominated for 18 different awards, made the money, obtained the fame, the notoriety, all the stuff that I thought would essentially fix the issues I had in my heart and mind. And I would love to, talk about that deeper, but really it goes back to my mom had me when she was 16 and my dad was living in the very small town that I was living in. So we were living in the same town that my father was living in. And
so teen pregnancy.
Right. And so he was never, the big thing was it was a super small town.
Yeah.
Never my father in my home or in my life. But he was in such close enough proximity where I would see him. So it was almost like reaffirming the inadequacies that I felt when I would go to a football game or a basketball game and everyone's dad would be there but mine, and knowing that he was just down the street.
Yeah.
And that was just something that it went from something that was confusing to frustrating. And like a lot of people, I have a high achiever personality, and I believed that I needed to prove myself to myself. I needed to prove myself to the world. I felt like I needed to prove to him that I was worth something.
Hmm.
And, and early on, that was like scholastics, sports, And then it was just like achievement after achievement, because achievement meant affirmation. And right. affirmation, I got the thing that I desired most.
So what was the extent of your interaction with him growing up?
So I think he reached out to me a few times and like maybe tried to, you know, have me come over to hang out or tried to do a lunch or something like that. And I don't think there was, I don't think he didn't try whatsoever, but the times that he did try, it was few and far between. And then as time passed, I mean, in retrospect, I can understand that there was a level of shame that probably grew. And as the level of disconnect grew, the level of shame grew, and we just stopped really interacting.
At what age?
I mean, I'm talking, I was probably in the same room as him 10 times from birth until 18.
Wow. So like very limited interaction.
Right. Even though like my mom worked at this restaurant growing up and his father owned the gas station across the street, and I would see him, you know, periodically and see, you know, my grandparents that I didn't really know. And so it was almost like, you know, the thing that reminded me what I didn't have, I would see very often.
Wow. So what do you think as a kid? Like, I'm imagining you as like 10-year-old boy, right? Yeah. You're in this small town, you know who your dad is and he knows who you are, but it's like, you're not really talking about it. You don't have that kind of relationship. You see him around. What does 10-year-old Josh interpret that to mean? Like, how do you interpret that, translate that as you're kind of processing it as a kid?
I think at 10, there was an additional layer that was even potentially more problematic. So my mom got married when I was almost 8.
Okay.
And that marriage lasted for about 5 years. And he was a drug addict, very abusive to her. So the thing that I desired, having a father in my home, all of a sudden was somewhat of a reality, but it was the most, like, the poorest example
yeah.
that you can imagine. And there was a time where that, you know, I've had the opportunity to really process this with a lot of people. And just there's this moment where, like, my mom was being abused. And when this would happen, there would be a dresser that was pushed against the door. And I remember, like, putting my forearm against the door and, like, pushing as hard as I could. And I couldn't push the dresser away from it. And it made me feel almost, it reaffirmed, well, I'm not strong enough. I'm not good enough. I can't even protect my mom. That's the only thing that I really got value from. So I got value through accomplishments, but my reason for existing at that point in my life was to protect my mom at all costs. And that was a glaring example of, I couldn't protect my mom.
Wow. So she's literally on the other side of that door and you know she's getting hurt.
Yeah.
And you're helpless. You don't have control. You don't have power. There's nothing you can do.
Right.
And so the lies, you know, the enemy starts so subtly to start planting these lies of who you are. You're not good enough. You can't even protect her. You're not strong enough. Nobody likes you. Your dad yeah. doesn't even have a relationship with you. And all of yeah. these things then become the template for your identity, what you believe sure. about yourself. So fast forward with me, like teen years, like, when did the whole world of porn even get on your radar?
Yeah. So the first time I saw pornography, I was around 13 years old, and I was at a cousin's house, and it was a magazine, and I saw it, and I remember the way it made me feel. And I was thinking, like, is this what sex is? Because I had limited exposure of what does it even look like, you know, to have a mom and dad in your house? Like, what does a relationship look like? Like, all I knew was life experience. So I saw that and I felt some sort of way. And soon after that, instead of being, I didn't struggle with pornography, but seeing pornography, it led to me testing the waters in regarding like promiscuity, like with girls. And that became, you know, my next, you know, achievement, dopamine hit, you know, if I could pursue someone and they would accept me and we would hook up or whatever, that would be the next thing that, you know, the next season of my life.
So it's almost like those lies, I'm not good enough, I can't, I'm not. So you started numbing those with experiences to mask that. Like, if I can hook up, it makes me feel like I've got something that they want.
Yeah. So with, you know, started around that same time, started drinking. And then again, trying to numb the pain, fit in, feel like I was somebody. And I was, you know, I was a popular kid, played sports, was good at sports. And then I started modeling and acting when I was 13 or 14, which was kind of strange in the sphere of my friends, where I was in a small town in South Carolina, you know, like self-proclaimed watermelon capital of the world, you know, just like seed spitting contests and stuff like that. So for someone who is doing like runway shows, that was kind of strange, perceived as strange among my friends, but I enjoyed it. So that's something I started doing around 13 or 14, did that into college. So go to college, really not pursuing an education. I'm studying theater because I wanted to continue modeling and acting, and I thought that would be beneficial to me. Continued the same like hookup culture in college, joined a fraternity, did all the things. And then the second semester of my sophomore year of college is when I dropped out and decided to move to Hollywood. I thought, you know, if I put myself in a closer proximity to the industry I wanted to be in, it made sense. I didn't really know why I was in school. It was almost like preventing me from getting some of the jobs, because, you know, if I was auditioning for something and someone was local, in contrast to me needing to get my mom to take me to Charlotte to fly to somewhere. So I thought, okay, I'm just going to go all in on this.
Yeah. So you moved to Hollywood and you're still kind of living that lifestyle and trying to succeed and like prove to yourself that you've got value, you know, you've got something people want. Sure. Right.
I would say that'd be a great way to articulate that. It's like, I wanted to feel like I had something that was worth something. So I moved to Hollywood, got an agent, was having some success, not a ton. So I was getting, you know, auditions, and I was doing some print work, a little bit of runway stuff. Things were going okay, not great. It was going not well enough where I, like most people, I had to get another job.
Yeah.
And I was working at, you know, one of those is like a restaurant / bar where you didn't provide a resume, you provided a headshot, you know, just like one of those places. And I was working there, and it was there that three girls walked in and asked if I was interested in joining the porn industry.
So what are you thinking in that moment?
Well, I mean, it was weird. It was like, it was a combination of like flattery, mm-hmm. and like, that's a bad idea. Like, knowing like, okay, that sounds fun and I'm flattered, but if I do that, I know that it's going to cost me something. Like, it's going to like impact my life in a negative way. But I guess I just didn't want to believe that to be true. I knew it to be true, but it's almost like, if I did this, how big of a deal would it be?
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm imagining you with the underlying belief of, do I have something people want? I have to prove to myself that I have something that people want. And then all of a sudden, there's a very loud and clear, here's what people want. They want this. I have something that people want. So I could see how that is desirable for you in that moment with everything that you've been through. Like, here's, I'm trying to make it in every, in other areas. It's not working, but here's something people want. And like kind of wrestling with that.
Yeah. And it, like, in a very real way, I met with, so the girls invited me to meet with an agent, and the agent said, ask me three questions. Why am I in LA? What do I hope to accomplish? And, you know, how did I grow up? Why am I in LA? And what do I hope to accomplish? And I said, you know, I grew up pretty much me and my mom, and I am out here acting and modeling, and I guess I want to be famous. And just in retrospect, like thinking about myself or anyone saying like the thing that they want to accomplish is to be famous.
Right.
Like, I think for me, that's such a visible sign of brokenness.
Well, what do you think it is? Like, let's dig into that. What is fame? It's I want to be seen.
I want to be heard. I want to be known. I want to be loved. I want to be affirmed, you know, all the things that God gives us to desire, and he provides through a relationship with him. Intimacy, I would say, like, in a nutshell, it's intimacy.
Yeah.
Our heart desires to be in an intimate relationship with God through the person of Jesus. And until you experience that, you're going to feel unfulfilled. And what is true is, if you take your eyes off of Jesus and, you know, makes anything else an idol, whether it be, you know, being a mom, being a dad, your job, even ministry, the moment that you take your eyes off of him and put it towards something else, you're going to feel that level of discontentment in a very real way.
Yeah. Because I think our world normalizes that term, I want to be famous. It's like, it sounds so benign. Everybody wants to be famous. Kids want to be famous. Teenagers on TikTok want to be famous. And it sounds so just benign. Like, it sounds so innocent.
And really, there's no bar. You know, there's no, like, you'll never have enough.
Yeah.
When are you famous enough to the point where you're satisfied? Like, that bar doesn't exist, because you're constantly measuring yourself not based on what you're doing. You're measuring your success on how many people know you, and you're comparing your success based on those around you.
Right.
So you don't even know if you're actually successful. Everything is contingent on other people.
Yeah. I want to be seen. I want to be known. That's essentially what you're saying. And so...
Yeah.
So they scoop you up and you get started in your career?
Yeah, pretty much. I met with the agent, and he set up a shoot for me, and I did it. And very quickly, everything that I didn't think would happened, where I didn't think anyone would find out. I didn't think it would impact my life. The opposite happened. So that scene went somewhat viral, and my legitimate representation found out about that, and they're like, hey, I'm so sorry, but we can't represent you anymore. There's really clear language in your contract where we can't be associated with anything that we don't align with. So
you mean your like acting agent was like, okay, so now that you're in porn, we can't represent you anymore.
Correct.
Wow.
And then which is true pretty much across the board, but and then my mom found out. So being in a small town, word travels really fast. And, you know, it only took one person to see it to tell everyone. And it got back to my mom. And that was painful, knowing how many sacrifices that she made for me to get to where I was. Because, again, like, we weren't like well off financially, yet somehow I was always at basketball camps. I was at acting workshops. I had, you know, new photos. I was, you know, building my reel. I was, you know, in taking all these, you know, these voice classes, because I sounded like, you know, the biggest country hick in the world. I was saying like Mater and Tater and things like that. But my mom like really poured herself out into me, and I felt like I failed her more. It hurt me more that I hurt her.
Well, because you've spent your whole life trying to protect her.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're hurting her. You're on the opposite end of that door is what you feel like, right?
Absolutely.
But you still stayed in porn.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the really damaging thing about a lie. So if you believe a lie to be true,
yeah,
it's true to you. And right. What I believed was, well, I would say it, what I believed was that I couldn't do anything else, which is certainly not true. I could have done an array of things. Could I have continued acting and modeling? Probably not. But could I have gotten another job and pursued something else?
Yeah.
Certainly.
Yeah.
But what I felt like is everything that I was pursuing was no longer available. And the easy thing to do is always to continue to compromise.
Right.
So for me, it's like, I've already done this. And then the agent was saying, you know, I would love to offer you a contract. I'll make you the guy, you know, acting is part of the industry was shifting to making these like parodies and these big, you know, budget movies, and you could be the star in these. And, you know, going back to what you said earlier, I really believe for a moment, it's like, maybe I'm just not good enough to make it in, you know, to obtain the dreams that I have. But maybe this is, even though I know it's a counterfeit version of the dream that I have, maybe this is good as I could ever get. Or, you know, this is, you know, it's regarding like my talent and my abilities, this is the best opportunity that I'm going to have.
Right.
And I think it was a combination of, you know, lies that I had believed in and pain and also, almost like an unwillingness to face going through something hard, because, you know, to face what I did and to shift some things in my life would have been difficult, but definitely, you know, I could have done that, but I chose not to. So I believed, okay, there's nothing else I can do but do this. At the same time, well, whatever I'm doing, I mean, this is who I am today. I think it's kind of the beauty of like God redeems everything. And even there's certain personality traits that are good that if you are operating in the will of God, these are things that lead you into operating with excellence, you know, living your life in such a way that it impacts people and it aligns with, you know, you're the will that he has for your life, you know, the plan and purposes he has for your life. But, you know, I was really believing like, okay, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to be the best. I'm going to be the guy. I'm going to be the best. I'm going to win the awards. I'm going to make the money. I'm going to become the most famous person, believing that if I did those things, it would fix the way that I felt. And as you know, after, you know, I won X amount of awards, when the feeling didn't feel like I thought it would, when the achievement didn't fix my heart like I thought it would, it amplified the anxiety, it deepened the depression. And the money was one thing, but in the industry there's, you know, like performer of the year, and I'd been nominated for that 4 times, and in 2012 I won it. And I truly believed if I win that award, it would mean that I was somebody, I was the best, I was accomplished. And when I won that award and it didn't make me feel like I thought it would, like the depression was unbearable.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Is there something in your life you want to change? I sure hope so, because healthy people are always on the trajectory of learning and growing and healing. Maybe it's your negative thinking that's keeping you stuck. Maybe you find your emotions are overwhelming you with fear and hopelessness, shame, anxiety, or depression. Maybe you're struggling in your relationship with God. Maybe you're stuck in a pattern of unhealthy relationships. Maybe it's behaviors that are sabotaging your life, like an addiction or unhealthy habits. It could be your attitude, your mindset, or your perspective on life that needs to shift. Whatever it is, in order for change to happen, it has to start from the inside out. Taking the best of psychology and pairing it with God's word, my book Reset is all about getting healthy from the inside out. It's a book of 31 mindset shifts and sustainable practices that will guide you into the process of healing by giving you practical steps that will transform your life with change that lasts. No matter how many times you failed before, I want to help you do it differently this time. So grab a copy of Reset today and get ready to reset your life from the inside out. Check out DeborahFileta.com/reset or grab your copy anywhere books are sold. When you look back, would you say that that was like the lowest point for you? Like the highest point in a way, but ironically the lowest point?
Oh yeah. So on, there was a day where, you know, soon after that, where I'd done a film in Atlanta and I was flying back and I made a very clear plan to take my life. And I got back and I, you know, I had the means on which I was going to take my life. And I had this check in my pocket and I was like, I might as well go ahead and deposit this check so that after I die, it'll go to someone, my mom or my brother or someone. And I go into this bank thinking that, okay, I'm going to slide this check across the counter and they're going to, you know, they're going to affirm the way that I feel about myself, because on the check, on the memo of the check, directors would write something grotesque, almost, you know, just being masochistic, you know, just being mean, you know, just wow. to humiliate you. And because they knew that you would have to hand that to someone to deposit it.
Wow.
So I thought, well, normally I would just go ATM, Dropbox. I wouldn't want to face a person and hand them that check. But on this day, I thought, okay, when I slide the check across the counter and she gives me the look or says something, it's going to solidify what I believe about myself. And that's going to be the thing that I use to justify me taking my life. And I walk in and I slide the check across the counter and I just look and I wait. And instead, she looks me in the eye and says, Joshua, are you okay?
Wow.
Joshua, how can I help you?
And wow. That was,
you know, and what was really wild is this time in my life, I had isolated myself from any and everyone that was holding me accountable in any capacity, in that anyone that was saying, hey, I love you, but you know, this is not good for you. You should do something else. Like, you're better than this. So I pushed all those people away.
Yeah.
Like, even I hadn't talked to my mom, talked to any family, friends, anyone that truly cared about me. So I hadn't even heard my real name.
Wow.
For a year. So when that bank teller said my name, you know, because I in that industry, you know, it just points to the shame associated with, you go by a pseudonym.
Wow.
So I heard my name and it almost like shattered this plausible reality that was created by guilt and shame. And I felt everything I was numb to. And what, instead of taking my life, I ran and I called my mom and she said the same thing that she had been saying. I love you. You're so much better than this. Please come home. So I did.
Wow. That's amazing. I mean, yeah. like God just totally interrupted your cycle. You spent so many years believing trauma over truth. And then in that moment, God's like trying to burst the bubble and get your attention. What's most interesting though about this is you're in an industry that you're hoping to fill that void of, I have something to offer. But what they're actually doing is affirming the shame.
Sure.
Affirming your nothingness, affirming, pushing you down. It's almost like they have to destroy you and make you feel like they're the only ones that want you.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that would say, I would just say this. So I've been out of that industry for 11 years, and over an 11-year period, 30 people that I know on a personal basis that was in the industry for an extended period of time have committed suicide or have died of overdose.
Oh my word.
Like every person that was ever a roommate of mine, dead. Many of the people that I knew, like I only know one person that is in a healthy place right
wow.
now. And it, I mean, it's not a huge industry. Like the pornography industry in a whole, like very big, but as far as like the production side of the industry, especially what it was like, you know, in the mid 2000s, it was you know, there were 7 or 8 studios, and there were 30 guys that the directors would use often, and was a, you know, a pretty a cyclical thing of girls where they would age out really quickly. And to your point, it's like, yeah, everyone in the industry was like, well, you know, no one's going to, I mean, the reason I wanted to take my life was what you're saying. It's like, no one's ever going to take you seriously. You know, you're not going to find anyone outside of this industry to marry you. What kind of father could you possibly be? What kind of mother could you possibly be? And your only worth is selling yourself for sex. And when the phone stops ringing, and your life is, you know, your life is destroyed through the lens and how you see yourself and how you see the world, it's like, you know, it looks pretty grim.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And the sad part is you were like such a perfect candidate in the sense of you were carrying this need to be seen and known and loved and affirmed. And it's like you were a magnet for all of these unhealthy areas because you're just longing for somebody to give you the stamp of approval. And ironically, it turns out to be the opposite in that they kind of continue that cycle so that they can keep you.
Yeah.
So you call your mom. Like for you, when did you decide I need to do things differently? I have to change.
Well, I thought changing, so it's an interesting question because I thought changing meant no longer doing what I was doing, which changing often means, well, I need to take inventory. I need to do some healing. I need to process.
Right.
For me, I'm going to do something different and I'm going to suppress everything. So I'm going to put enough, you know, good dirt on my bad dirt so I don't feel dirty anymore.
Right.
So I went from, you know, honestly, I went to a different career, but I had the same mentality. So I started working in the health and fitness space as a coach, and I had the same mentality in that, well, I'm going to get every accreditation under the sun. I'm going to become the most educated. That way I sound, you know, smart. I'm going to, you know, get all these, you know, accolades so that I'm perceived as a certain way. I'm going to become the best coach. I'm going to build the best online personal training program. And again, I did all these things and again, felt very dissatisfied, even though I was having, you know, from the outside looking in, I started working at a gym and quickly worked my way up to management. And, you know, on the outside looking in, like, oh, he's changed his life. He's got,
right,
you know, pulled himself together.
But all it is that magnet is now just going to something else for that affirmation, the validation, something a little healthier from the outside in, but the underlying issue, the void, is still existing.
Yeah. And I mean, I woke up, I had, you know, night terrors most nights, lied to everyone I met, about, you know, why I was in LA and what I had done, and tried my best to just cover up everything, didn't want to deal with it, and just left this, you know, barrage of collateral damage behind me. It's like every friendship or relationship that I would have, it would just be filled with lies. I even found myself lying about, like, my relationship with my father because it was so hurtful to talk about. Because I just wanted to be someone else. I so badly wanted to be someone else. And then I met this girl and I asked her out on a date and she kind of, you know, shot me down, but then agreed to go for a run. And when we went on this run, I just felt like I was just tired. I was tired of pretending. I was tired of hurting people. I was tired of getting hurt. So I thought, like, okay, I'm just going to put it all out there. That way she knows and she's not going to want anything to do with me. And it's going to save us both a lot of trouble. And I was like, hey, you know, and then, you know, like 5 minutes later, it's like, I've told her, you know, any and everything I could think of that I was embarrassed about myself, or things that I would say, like, here's, you know, building a case. Well, this is how bad of a person I am. And at the end of it, she was pretty taken back. But then she asked me, well, are you doing those things now? And I said, no. And she's like, well, a person is not defined by the worst thing they've ever done. And they're not defined by the greatest thing they'll ever do. And that was really hard for me to hear, because I believed that my whole life, right? Not just when I was doing bad things. It's like, you know, my identity was now both, I am not valuable because of rejection of my father, and I am a bad person because I've done bad things. And she was like, well, no, that's, you know, those things you said might be true, but that's not who you are. God defines who you are. Do you know him?
Wow.
And, you know, I conditioned myself to, you know, I call it the first date mask. It's where I don't know who I am. I'm just going to try to pretend to be whoever you want me to be. And that just didn't work with her. She dug deep quickly. And she's like, well, you know, I've been following Jesus since I was in seventh grade. And this is my life. It looks the way it looks. And I live the way I live because Jesus is the foundation of my life. I'm not perfect by any means. But anyway, she's like, well, tell me about yourself. Like, what kind of food do you like? What kind of, like, what are some of the hopes and dreams do you have? And I was like, again, I was like, you don't want me to leave? And, like, I don't have any long-term goals. Like, and outside of, like, aesthetics and fitness and things like that, I was like, I don't have hopes or dreams or goals for myself, because I didn't believe that those were in the cards for me anymore. Because, I mean, from a kid, if you asked me, like, what is, you know, it was, my mom has this card from when I was, like, in, like, fifth or sixth grade. It's like, what do you want to be when you grow up? So I wanted to be a dad.
Mm.
And I thought, like, that's just not possible. Like, I could get a girl pregnant, but I didn't have the capacity to be a dad.
Wow.
And she kind of just looked me in the face and just like, you're wrong, you know? And then we had this really great conversation. And then the following weekend, she invited me to church and I hear the gospel, and I can't, like, I couldn't reconcile, because what I was hearing was, you know, he shared this passage from 2 Samuel chapter 9, talking about this dynamic between Jonathan and David, and how historically the previous kingdom was wiped out when a new kingdom was established, because they didn't want anyone to think they had access to the new kingdom. But, you know, this the dynamic between Jonathan and David was different. They were deep friends. And David asked, you know, is there anyone remaining out of the lineage of Saul? And Mephibosheth was remaining, and they went and found Mephibosheth, and Mephibosheth was expecting death because he knew history. But instead, David had his guards bring him into his kingdom, gave him a seat at his table, and even restored his land. And I'm hearing all this, and, you know, he goes, you know, Romans 3:23, you know, we've all sinned. So, like, we're all guilty. And then Romans 6:23, we're all, you know, the wages of sin is death. So we're all deserving of death. And I'm with him. But what I can't wrap my head around is the good news he shared about Jesus being fully God, fully man, laying down his life, facing temptation, but never sinning, and going to the cross and dying and rising on the third day. And like, I believe this to be true. But what I can't wrap my head around was, why would God in flesh die for me? Like, my own dad didn't want me. Like, why would he do that for me? And I feel like just the right time, he started reading a portion of Hebrews 12. He was talking about, it was with joy set before him that Jesus endured the cross. And it started to click that, like, yes, Jesus was perfect, so he was obedient to his father, but it was also love that sent him to the cross, that there's a God that loves me. And that love, you know, it penetrated to, you know, to the depths of my bones, and gave my life to Christ that day. And that girl that told me, hey, you're not defined by the worst thing you've ever done. That's, her name's Hope, and that's my wife. And we've been married for almost 8 years, and we're about to have our fourth boy.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. You're a dad.
Yeah.
You know, it is amazing what God can do. And you know, I'm just imagining you now saying yes to Jesus, but then also saying yes to starting that work of, okay, I got to start digging.
Yeah.
I got to dig up the new dirt and I got to get down to the old dirt.
Yeah.
And I imagine that has been quite a journey for you. What does that process look like for you of, you know, because we know coming to Jesus is step one, right? It's like right. the ultimate step, but then the healing work begins.
Yeah, there's certainly like levels of consecration. And yeah. I love the example in John 21 where Peter and Jesus is having this conversation. It's like, you know, he's asking him, do you love me? Yes, I love you. Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? You know, he asked him three times, but in the Greek, he's saying, do you agape me? And then Peter's saying, I phileo you. Agape, phileo. And then the third time, Jesus says, phileo. And then Peter's like, yeah, I can commit to that.
Yeah.
And I think in a way, it's an example of like, God already knows where you are. But if you're willing to meet him where you truly are, like not where you hope to be, not where you pretend to be. If you're willing to bring your full self, all of your scars, all your hurts, all of it, if you're willing to bring yourself to him in that way, what's going to happen is there's going to be things over time that, because you don't do that once, you do it on a daily basis. There's going to be things that happen in your life. And there's going to be something that comes to the surface that has been suppressed.
Yeah.
You know, something you didn't deal with or something that happened.
Right.
And
God reveals it when he wants to heal it. Right.
Yeah.
And on the journey with him, it's like little by little, your awareness of what is he bringing up today. And I think sometimes, Josh, when people feel that stuff coming up, they feel like they've gone backwards. Something sure. is wrong. Why am I thinking about this? Why is this bothering me? Why am I stuck on this again? But really, in his goodness, he's revealing it because he wants to heal it, not because you've gone backwards, but because yeah. he wants to move you forward. And you can't go forward until you deal with this.
Right. And I think you can't reconcile like poor behavior, like patterns, until you're willing to dig into that hurt. Because I know, like for myself, like chaos was comfortable for me.
Right.
And some people were just like, well, I thrive in chaos. Well, like, okay, like, sure, you might be high capacity, but chaos is not something that we should long for.
Right.
Like chaos is an opportunity to rely on God, to rely on people. Chaos is actually an opportunity. It's like, just, you know, Romans 2:4 is talking about repentance, right? So God is patient. He's kind. He's loving. So he allows us to see, okay, here's something that feels chaotic. Here's something that feels painful. Here's something that's happening in my life. It's bringing up these emotions, and all emotions are God-given, but how I process them are not always in God's sovereignty and
God's
way.
You're absolutely right. Emotions are a signal, but it is up to us to take that signal and respond in a healthy way or an unhealthy way.
Yeah, and for me, it was hide and cover up, hide right. and cover up. Like that was my game plan. So for me, a game changer for me was, so 8 years ago, there was a guy that was like, hey, we're going to have a conversation every Friday. We called him Hot Conversation. So honest, open, and transparent. And I loved him enough to tell him the truth. And he loved me enough to, you know, say some things that stung sometimes, because I needed both encouragement and constructive criticism. And constructive criticism was something that I was wired to know is beneficial for me. There's no athlete that gets better without receiving constructive criticism. There's no actor that doesn't get, you know, that gets right. better without constructive criticism. There's no communicator, you know, you name it. You need to be able to receive constructive criticism so that you can see your flaws, so that you can improve. So just putting myself in that place where it's like, I'm going to tell you how I'm feeling. I'm going to tell you like not only what I did, but what happened in my mind, how I felt, and just us talking about that and getting into the habit of, I don't need to hide and overcome. I need to process.
Yeah.
And just being like getting to the point where, you know, I understood my personality, where for me, I like, for some people, like writing's super beneficial. For me, it's like, I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth sometimes until I start talking. And in a safe place,
yeah,
that's a great thing.
Yeah, it really is. I heard someone say recently, if you don't speak it, you store it.
Yeah, that's good.
And it's the truth of like, we have to process this stuff and allow God to bring it out of us and put the pieces together in the right way and then reprocess it. People are always asking me, where do I find a good counselor? At the Deborah Falada Counselors Network, we want to help you navigate through any difficult season you might be facing. We want to help you find relief from the pain and stress of the present and healing from the wounds of the past in order to find freedom, joy, and peace in the life you're living today. Our team of trained, licensed professional counselors will walk by your side and give you the tools you need to face any personal or relational issue you might be up against today. With an integrative approach, we'll guide you with truths from God's Word paired with the best of modern counseling and psychology to help you get unstuck and live freely. There's no better time for healing than today. Book a session with one of our counselors at deborahfalada.com/counseling and get started on your journey of healing from the inside out. You were so vulnerable from such a young age because of so many things, one of which was your relationship with your dad or your lack of relationship with your dad. So where are you at with that? How have you processed that? How have you healed from that?
So it was, I had some like three steps forward and two steps backward and then three steps forward. So my wife found his information and connected us. And we had a really healthy conversation. So I was living in Raleigh, in Raleigh, North Carolina at the time. So not, you know, too far away from him, about 2 hours. So we went there and spent some time with him. Something I was sharing with you earlier, it's like if reconciliation doesn't meet your expectations, it can actually be more damaging.
Right.
And I had the expectations of, you know, I'm going to see this man and he's going to be the, you know, the father that I've always needed. And he's going to be the grandpa like to, you know, my kids. Cause we had a child at the time. We had our first child and it just, you know, I was 30 at the time and we didn't have a lot of like similar interest. And I felt in a way he just wanted everything to like pretend like it didn't happen almost.
Yeah.
Or maybe a better way to say it would be he just wanted to treat me like, you know, he had two other kids and he's just like, okay, well, you know, you're here
now.
Pick
up where we left off.
Yeah. And I was really frustrated by that.
Yeah.
And so today we might talk or share a text message about once a month. But there's not like the relationship that I hope for doesn't currently exist. I'm hopeful, but at the same time, I can't allow that to be detrimental to my life, to my psyche, you know. So I think so many people don't experience the healing that's available to them because, you know, if there is reconciliation in a relationship or they, you know, they meet their father or their mother or whatever it might be. Like your presuppositions are so strong that when things don't work out like you thought they would, that can actually be more damaging.
Right.
And actually take, you know, two steps backwards. And I think I had to get to a place where I was willing to say, all right, these things did hurt me. But at the same time, I, upon my own volition, made choices that I didn't have to make. And while you like, yes, that the mental and emotional trauma that I experienced, it did impact the way that I saw myself and the way that I saw the world. But at the end of the day, I chose to do those things. And there was something about me taking ownership of that and extending forgiveness to him, putting myself in his shoes in that, okay, I could see how, you know, someone that's 16, 17, 18, and out 20, in a small town, seeing, you know, this child, and it was, you know, obviously a mistake to him, you know, like he didn't intend to get my mom pregnant. So like this happens, and then he's married and he's got these two other kids in this life. I'm sure there's a level of shame that he felt. And as time passed, it increased.
Right.
So the easiest way to, you know, to deal with something like that, you know, it's not healthy, but the easiest way to deal with it is just to deflect.
Yeah. Which isn't unsimilar to how you handled hard things when you went through them.
Certainly.
You know?
Certainly. It's funny. It's like we were talking about this earlier. It's like something as simple as like my wife's family, our in-laws are in Iowa, and we drove like from Iowa to Dallas, 12 hours. And it's almost like I've gotten to a place where I enjoy doing hard things because like that gives me a sense of accomplishment in a way where it's so much easier not to do the hard thing.
Right.
It's so much easier to, you know,
when you've grown up taking the easy route, you're showing yourself that you don't have to take the easy route.
Right.
The pain-free route isn't always the best option. Like there's healthy pain. You know, the pain of working out is healthy pain. It hurts.
Yeah.
But I think the key is being people who can differentiate between the healthy pain and the unhealthy pain.
Sure.
Sometimes pain is just a sign you shouldn't be doing this.
Right.
But not all pain can just be lumped into the category of things to avoid, you know?
Yeah.
One thing you said about your relationship with your dad that I find really interesting is you couldn't necessarily adjust your relationship with him in the way that you wanted to. But what you did do was adjust the value that you received from that relationship.
Yeah.
You can't adjust the relationship always, but you can adjust the value that you receive from that relationship. You can't always change the person across from you in a relationship, but you can change yourself.
Yeah.
Which then influences the dynamic of that relationship and what you receive or refuse to receive from it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean I had to, you know, create healthy boundaries. You know, for myself, almost mentally, where it's like, if I don't talk to him, like every week, if I call him and he doesn't call me back, or if I text him and he doesn't text me back, I can't allow that to be so demoralizing to me.
Right.
And it's through like, Darius Daniels wrote this like really cool book about essentially like relationship intelligence. And just like there's levels of relationships. And just understanding, it's like, okay, this relationship is not on the level that I want it to be, and I have to be okay with it, because if I believe that this relationship is on a different level than it actually is, I'm gonna get hurt because of assumptions that I have,
right?
And like he doesn't have the same assumptions that I have, so I have to understand that to prevent myself from being hurt,
right? Yeah, I shift the expectations and what you're receiving from this relationship and almost put it in its appropriate place, which is really hard to do when it's a parent.
Sure.
Because the assumption is that the appropriate place is here, close by. Like this values, it informs my value. It informs so much of who I am. But in this context, that's not the case. And in fact, it's healthier to push that relationship a little bit further away. And not to have as high expectations from what it can give you, and then shift your expectations and go to people who can measure up to some of those things and that give and take that you need in relationships.
Yeah, and it's been really healing in that. Not only did I need mentorship and accountability and counseling and things like that, it's like, you know, my father-in-law, like my wife's dad, like he filled a lot of gaps in some ways where, just practically like showing me how to do things, like you know, buying me, you know, tools and showing me how to use them. You know, just, it seems like so simple, but for me, it was so restorative. And,
yeah.
And then just having mentors in my life where I got to see men being men,
right,
through the lens of as they should be. I got to see, you know, men like loving their wives as they should. I got to see like healthy dynamics between, you know, a husband and a wife. And God has put so many people in my life, and through those relationships, I've been able to receive a lot of healing. And then just moments like with God where I remember when our first son was born, you know, he's all like yucky, and I'm like, the nurse is like, you can touch him, and I reach in his direction, and he grabs my finger, and I hear God, you know, whisper to me like in my spirit, that I love you more than that, and how like you would die for him. I died for you.
Yeah.
And you know, just little moments like that, and not being afraid to feel the emotions that I feel. And I think like that for me, like just like small things like that, like not running away from stuff like that and embracing that and holding it close and then processing it.
Right.
Has been so healing for me, because it's so easy for men that grew up with, because there's all kinds of fatherlessness where, you know, maybe there was divorce, maybe there was a death, maybe he was in the home, but he wasn't present. And all these things are traumatic, and they cause you to see yourself incorrectly, because you need that. And if that gap isn't mitigated in some way, whether it be, you know, a mentor in your life or something, a friendship or something, it's so easy to form this incorrect, you know, viewpoint of yourself. And then you live through this broken lens, and you see the world in that way. And even if you're healed, even if you're following Jesus, there's still a level of brokenness, because you're seeing yourself through a trauma or a hurt.
Right.
If you don't process that with people, I think you'll never experience the fullness of what God has for you.
Yeah. You continue living out of that trauma when you aren't able to acknowledge that you're living out of the trauma.
Yeah. Because ultimately it's not your fault.
Right.
Like it's not like a lot, like sure, I made decisions that were upon my own volition, and they had a very real cause and effect. But at the same time, it wasn't my fault that I had the relationship I have with my dad. It's not my fault that, you know, this person that my mom married was abusive and all this. Like these things were not my fault. So forgiving my father allowed me to forgive myself, and at the same time, take on this ownership of, I did make mistakes.
Right.
I was selfish. I was prideful. I lacked humility. And often, you know, when we think about pride, sometimes it's, you know, it easily identifiable as someone that, you know, is, it thinks everything's about them. But at the same time, you know, there's this other spectrum where if you're not willing to step into this place that God has for you, it's prideful as well.
Right.
Where it's like there's healing that's available to you, and there's things that are available to you. And out of your frustration and brokenness, you don't step into what God has for you. That's also pride in a way.
Yeah. You know, one thing I want to highlight when you talked about forgiveness, I think what paves the way for forgiveness is empathy and compassion. And for you to be able to look at your dad and have empathy for his situation, it paves the way for forgiveness. When you're able to look at yourself and have compassion for your role and what you did, it paves the way for forgiveness. But forgiveness doesn't mean there's no role, right? There's no ownership. And so I think it's really important to understand that for those of you who might be feeling stuck, like, how do I forgive? How do I forgive that type of damage? To be able to ask the Lord to give you empathy, to see through the trauma that the other person went through, to see through the deficits, the skill sets that they were missing, and to be able to wrap your brain around, okay, I can see their perspective. They still have to take ownership of the fact that it was wrong, but I can see why. And for us, the same. Like, I can see why A led to B, which led to C, but I still have to take ownership of it.
Sure.
So when you forgive yourself and when you forgive others, there's still a role. There is still ownership and responsibility. In fact, I think the healthiest type of forgiveness can only happen when there's ownership and acknowledgement and responsibility. They don't cancel each other out. They work with each other. So that sounds exactly like the journey you've been on of like being able to forgive him, but still acknowledge the loss, the pain, the hurt, being able to forgive yourself.
Yeah.
But still acknowledge the role that you played in making your life happen. We can't choose the hand we've been dealt in relationships, but we choose what we do with that hand. We choose what we do thereafter.
And it prompts me and propels me in a way where it's like, for me, I know that I could buy my kids stuff, and I do, but I value experiences with them, and I may have not had that perspective necessarily if I wouldn't have went through some of the things that I went through.
Yeah.
So I think that I'm more intentional as a father, and what is just true. It's like, you know, anyone that's gone through anything traumatic, if you're able to essentially fail forward, you end up learning so much more about yourself, and you're so much more of a holistic person than you could have ever been if you wouldn't have went through those things, because you can see the world through the lens of, okay, I experienced this and that wasn't right, but now I've been healed and now I know what is.
Right.
But I think I can be a more intentional and better father because of some of the things that I went through. But it's only because I've done the work and there's been people to pour into my life.
Yeah. And I imagine in this season of life, you know, you're at a point where you're trying on a daily basis to live out of a template of truth rather than a template of trauma, of assessing your life every day and making sure you're living out of a place of, here's what God has given me to offer the world, rather than do I have something to offer them so that I'm valuable, so that I'm special, so that they think I'm worthy, but rather I am worthy. And because of that, this is what God has given me to offer. It's living out of a place where you're giving from rather than giving for, right?
That's so good. I mean, that's where we need to recalibrate ourselves often to remember that. Because like when we're operating out of overflow, that's the most healthy place to be. But it's so easy to go back to like even doing good things.
Right.
And making those things about, well, I need to do this so that.
Right.
It's like, no, like I get to do this.
Yeah.
And
that's the beautiful thing. When God exposes your trauma template, you get the upper hand, because every day you get to look at that trauma template and be like, okay, am I going to live out of that one, or am I going to live out of this one?
Yeah.
You know, every single day we have that option. For some people, they don't even know they're living out of their trauma template. They think it's their truth. Right. Sure. But when God shows you, when he exposes, this is your trauma template and here's where it came from, like, let's dig some of this dirt up. Then each and every day we have that choice of, which template am I going to live out of today in our interactions and our decisions and how we parent in our marriage and our ministry. And it's just neat to kind of hear you process all of that and watch the Lord exchange your trauma template for his truth in every part of your life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you for sharing your story, letting me poke and prod a little bit.
Absolutely.
And uncover some of the things that have been buried under the surface that God has been exposing and challenging you to heal. And I believe there's new layers in every season that God's like, I'm going to expose something new this year. You know, you're ready for a deeper level. Leave us with one thing, one word of encouragement that you would offer somebody who is kind of living in that performance mentality of like, I have to do in order to be loved. I have to prove that I am worthy. What's a word of encouragement you would leave them with?
I would say, you know, as a follower of Jesus, like, we can know that God saw you in you know, the middle of your brokenness at your worst, and he sent his son to pay the debt for our sin. So it's like, what are we worth? We're worth Jesus on the cross.
A whole lot.
So if that's where your worth comes from, that changes everything. And I would just say, on a very practical level, it's so easy to believe that the uniqueness of your trauma or the uniqueness of your pain, whether it be something that you made a decision that led to something traumatic, or maybe it was something that happened to you that was out of your control, it's so easy to believe that you're stuck and it'll always be this way. This is just who you are. There's so much more available to you if you're willing to lean into the pain.
Yeah.
Because when you lean into it, what's going to happen is God's going to bring something to the surface. And if you do that with trusted people like yourself, if you're willing to process pain, there's so much healing that's available to you, and you don't have to stay stuck where you are.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to always be this way. Regardless of how bad or how big or how painful it might be, there's so much freedom. There's so much availability for you to feel lighter, the joy that you've never felt, the hope that you've never saw possible for you. It's available to you. Like that's the gospel.
Yeah,
that's the gospel. Yeah. That there is hope that's available to you, and there's a joy that's available to you, and there's a lightness that comes with walking with Jesus. And part of that is doing it in community, doing it with people. So I would say, find someone that you can trust and tell someone the thing that you've been holding on to. And you said, well, I'll never tell anyone this, or maybe you haven't told anyone for so long that you just feel it doesn't matter, or you're stuck, or it'll just always be this way. Like, gosh, when you take that step to process your pain and you say it out loud, it stops holding you captive.
Yeah.
And that's where you start that journey of freedom.
Yeah, this isn't just a story. This is your real life. And I appreciate you sharing your life with us today. Thank you so much for joining me. Real quick, if people want to connect with you and what you're doing and your message of hope and healing and transformation, where can they find you?
Yeah, so across all social media is I am Joshua Broom. And my website is joshuabroom.me. And I have a really exciting project that's coming out March 5th. I have a book called Seven Lies That'll Ruin Your Life, and really talking about your heart desiring the things of this world, but them leading to brokenness and emptiness. But there's joy and true satisfaction to be found in the person of Jesus. So it's examining the lie, how it, me believing it, impacted my life, and how truth superseded, dismantled, destroyed that lie, and how you can apply it to your life as well. So super excited about that.
That sounds awesome. Thank you so much, Josh, for being with us and for sharing your story.
Absolutely. Thank you, Deborah.
Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast and giving me your time today. If you're enjoying what we're doing here, leave us a 5-star rating and review and help us get the podcast out to others. If you want to go deeper with getting healthy and making healthy relationships, go check out some of my books, True Love Dates, Choosing Marriage, Love in Every Season, Are You Really Okay, Married Sex, or my newest book, Reset. You can find more information about all of those, as well as hundreds of articles and courses, as well as the Deborah Falada Counselors Network, over at my blog, truelovedates.com, or my website, DeborahFalada.com. I love connecting with you online. So find me on Facebook or Instagram at Deborah Falada. Send me a DM and tell me your story. If you have a question on your mind or a guest suggestion, reach out to me at truelovedates.com/talktome and let me know what's on your mind. I'm Deborah Falada, and it was so great being with you today. I can't wait to talk with you again next week. I'll see you then.